Hi, I'm Charney Kay, founder and CEO of XJ Music. I've been a hacker and electronic musician since I was a kid. I was constantly on the drum machine, staying up all night, making beats. Now let me tell you about a project I've been passionate about for 20 years. XJ is a music technology project. It's a new algorithmic medium for collaborative aleatory music. For artists, XJ is a new avenue of expression in a world now enamored with AI plagiarism. For audiences, XJ is a new experience with exclusive streams live 24/7. My friends and extremely talented musicians are my closest thought partners in this business. The team has made XJ a reality. Allow us to introduce ourselves. We got Dave Cole here.
Hey.
Mark Stewart.
Hey.
Ian Hersey.
Hey.
And Jamal Whitaker.
What's going on?
Welcome to XJ Music. It's been more than 7 years since I was like first talking with Mark, just sharing these like very vague ideas about this. And then it's been a year since all of us that are here got to listen to like the first tonal sounds that XJ was making. Mm-hmm. When a person now looks at XJ Music, they just see this complete picture, even though this is very much in its infancy, like it's all there.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
In the past couple of years, we've seen some pretty freaky AI music apps out there. But XJ is not AI. XJ is a musical instrument. We're proud to be a human music tech project.
Right.
And hold that down.
All the way. That mirrors any band. You're doing it for the love of it. You're doing it for the passion. You're doing it for the artistry of music and music making.
So after we released the alpha prototype app, Jamal and I spent all this time focus testing. We send the app out to anonymous testers who make these recordings using the app while speaking into their phone. We reviewed a bunch of these throughout the process to identify the dissonance preventing people from accepting us as a music listening app. We've iterated on the design numerous times, and lately we've been getting good feedback.
Okay, so I have downloaded XJ Music. From what I understand, it looks like it is going to stream 24/7 original music in different playlists. Like there was one that was lo-fi beats, which is actually something I enjoy. So I like that it's just really simple. You just click on it and it starts playing. That's actually something I do a lot, is I'll just look up a genre, but not being able to skip a song, that would be a little bit frustrating because there's definitely a lot of times I just don't like the song and I just really enjoy being able to skip it.
This music was just some really cool beats. The beats varied a little bit. Just kind of some nice background music. I like that we can read the different descriptions about what we choose to play. I love that it's something different and unique.
I like the concept, the way that it talks about how it's not, you know, just a DJ putting a record back to back, that it's introducing new music into the streams. And I do like the focus on kind of like background ambience, trying to listen to, you know, news and podcasts while consciously thinking about my work is a little bit more difficult.
Almost every day I listen to music. Things like classical, jazz. One of the things I've liked about it is here it says, we're not playing records back here. I think it's a good thing. The algorithm plays for you something completely different. So you're listening to fresh ideas every time. Well, it's probably an advantage and a disadvantage. Sometimes there are songs which I almost listen to every day. They're the same songs. But then there are other days where you don't want to listen to the same songs. You just want to listen to something completely different.
The level of honesty you get from that situation is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wish there was that for like other parts of life. Or it's just like, tell me what you really think. For like cooking or something.
You could do that.
Yeah.
You are getting complete honesty because they don't know you from Adam. So there's no reason for them to like cushion it, right?
Exactly. In moments where, you know, even the app's design looking so similar to other music streaming services, and people would intuitively just hop on and start playing something and be like, well, where's the lyrics tab? You know,
mm-hmm. That's a sign we're doing a bunch of things right, where our app experience is on par with major listening platforms.
Right.
And we sneak into the part of the mind that's using Apple Music and Spotify, like sneaking into the VIP section.
Yeah, like you just hit podcast on the app and it just has a scrambled up version of this conversation. Yeah.
That goes on forever.
It never repeats.
Somebody would love that.
Yeah.
Me, I would love
that. Yeah, I would listen to that.
Puts you in like William Burroughs territory.
Sure.
What I think people don't understand about the ticket that exploded or whatever is that, like, didn't he just write a thing and then just completely scramble it?
I think he would take sheets of type paper and cut them up into phrases and words and then just reassemble them.
Yeah.
I think that's a David Byrne thing too.
Right, like right.
The Remain in Light lyrics or that.
So what I'm saying is that any of those actual books of his are not even really the point. He could just run the thing that he did to them again and again and get any number of books that are just as good or not good as the famous ones.
Just as bad as the famous ones.
Yeah, exactly. And so we could really just have a continuous stream of podcasts that's just as bad as any 30-second expanse of this conversation right now.
Well, that is a lot like the music we're making in that it is aleatory.
Aleatory means determined by chance, from the Latin alia, meaning dice or gambling. In aleatory music, the artist leaves some element of the composition to chance or the determination of its performer or performers.
Musical dice games date back to 18th century Europe, where people rolled dice to arrange these cut-up musical pieces and then play them together.
There's like a Wolfram Tones analog to that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. I remember when you were talking to me in the first place about signing on to XJ, and like, I think we've both always vibed with the idea of something that is ever-changing. It like has enough variables within it so as to be like effectively infinite. Something like that I consider like an oracle. You check in with it at random times and it's always different, and it can maybe give you something that happens to be useful to you or edifying or whatever.
Standing at my apartment, you know, on Dean Street in Brooklyn, this is when I was living with Dave Cole. Rubble Bucket was rehearsing in the basement pretty frequently. Bill Wirtz hanging around talking about making a video every day. Mark and I are sitting there listening to Wolfram Tones. I think we were actually planning on doing a float in the Mermaid Day parade. I volunteered.
Oh yeah.
To
we were getting pretty far in those. We were about to rent a flatbed truck to make that happen.
I remember that. I think I rehearsed for that.
Yeah. Oh boy, I need to hear that whole story.
You were gonna like wear Wolfram masks.
Yeah. Shout out Liz Kosak, wherever she is. Yeah, she made Wolf and Ram masks for us. The Wolfram band. That was Dave's and my idea in 2006, I think. We loved the website, which used, you know, the Stephen Wolfram cellular automata, you know, math drafting software that he had to generate MIDI music. And it had this awesome graph, which just looked like, you know, weird lines and dots that showed the evolution of your music.
It was kind of a short-lived thing. The thing that's funny about them is how like unsatisfying they are, how they just are this snippet of just randomness and then they just like fall off and end. They feel so fragmented. Actually, executing that music could only be so satisfying because it just didn't make any fucking sense.
We riffed on it and then it turned into like, okay, it's going to be a space opera. Everyone will be either wolves or rams.
Whoa.
You're going to have like your star-crossed lovers between a wolf and a ram. You know, there's going to be a baby ram and like
a baby wolf ram.
Whatever. A lot of really elaborate set design. And, you know, we didn't get that far, but we did play a few birthday parties of mine and there were masks.
Legendary.
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah.
Ian was definitely there.
I remember quitting that for sure.
Yeah, I remember you quit that. It was quote unquote not worth all the effort.
Even if you were to play that shit like dead on, the amount of time that this demands, there's not enough of a return, like artistic return on what is required to invest. What makes music real is like the intention. Basically, anybody who's making music, even if they don't really think it through or if it's like first thought, best thought philosophy, there's still some intention behind it. Even if it's not that good, there's a human being who like decided that they were going to make something in music, you know? And regardless of the quality of that, and there might have been some experimentation to get to those decisions, but they ultimately just decided that this is what it is, you know? This is the music that we have decided that we're going to play. The thing that makes Wolfram funny is that there is zero intention.
It was extremely difficult music.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Was it worse than the Shinobi Controls?
Yes. So then the Shinobi Band? Yeah, it was much more difficult than that.
Wow. I was at a couple of parties at Mark's house, birthday parties for him or one of his roommates, all musicians. Mark handed out these charts to everyone to play through. Wolfram mostly went down in that context. But I gotta say, that three-part guitarmony in your transcription of Shinobi Controls was one of my favorite things ever. I realized that I got terribly spoiled by you guys during the 15 years I lived in New York City. When Dave started coming down from Boston, he'd be in town with a few other musician friends from Berkeley. I'd get this call like, dude, you gotta come here. Like, this guy that no one's ever heard of is playing underneath a garbage can lid on the intersection of 14th and 7th Ave at 3:47 p.m. And then we're there and there's like 15 people there.
Yeah.
And it's the sickest fucking thing I've ever heard, you know? I feel really blessed for that.
Where did you first get the idea for XJ?
If you remember, I had a couple shows in Boulder.
Yeah, I remember one of them.
The Live in Boulder album at the Band Shell, where I had the pair of MPC 2000s and the scratch mixer.
That's awesome.
MPC stands for Music Production Center. It's a box about the size of a turntable with a screen and keys and a grid of drum pads, allowing users to record portions of sound, modify them, and play them back as sequences.
I had started as a DJ with two turntables and a mixer. DJ stands for disc jockey because you're mixing between records or discs on the turntables. And I swapped the two turntables out for two MPCs. And instead of playing records, I was performing complex sample sequences. So I changed the letter D in DJ to an X and called myself an XJ. I had just come from this world of tracking, which is this demo scene, computer programmers competing against each other to make music that's like laid out in these grids of 8s and 64s, and like you see hexadecimal codes sticking out of the music, and basically like a chiptune situation. And I was just deep into this world. I was trying to live and make music in a space that was never finished. I didn't really want to pay that much attention to finalizing all the tracks and mixing it and figuring out where the song begins and ends, you know? I just wanted to show up for the gig, set up my samplers, and just rock.
You just wanted to jam,
right?
Kind of like a jazz musician. There's always some different iteration on it to be had that's never finished.
I was never good at being an electronic music act. The moment that I had performed a show, I was bored with it. That was it. It was like, if you were at that show, great. And if you weren't, then it's done. It wasn't like I kept creating an infinite amount of material. I have to assume that this is still what happens for a major artist, that record an album and then you go on tour with the album and it keeps evolving.
I feel like artists have different opinions and thoughts about that, depending on who you talk to, you know?
I had that idea 20 years ago. I played a handful of shows after I moved to Brooklyn. I see my friends that are professional musicians that have really made that journey over the years, and I see how much work goes into that, and I never put in that work. I'm a hacker and made my career in digital media production. And I probably have a lot in common with Mark in the sense that my brain will get hooked onto something that's very absurd, kind of out there. And that's so exciting to me that I have to do it.
Yeah. I don't mean to sound dismissive of anybody who has an absurd idea. That's kind of where I like to live too. And just imagine, wouldn't it be crazy if this happened? I would love to hear what that actually sounds like, no matter how crazy or absurd the idea is. I think that most interesting music is born out of notions like that, you know?
I started thinking in terms of people having different roles. I started thinking in terms of music making being something that was distributed across time and space. So even though you were hearing it live at one time, the work being done is just happening in a more abstract way. I became more and more excited about XJ as a recording medium, thinking of it as an evolution of sample sequencing, specifically because there's all these other apps out there that are talking about AI music composition, it just caused me to double down on what if we built a new instrument that allows humans to make music that's more than human, but is still human. For the earliest prototype, I just went into my kitchen and recorded the sounds of hitting pots and pans with a wooden spatula. I needed help, and Mark was the first intrepid explorer. Mark Stewart comes from a classical musical family. He's an all-around beast of a composer and performer on numerous instruments. I remember him most on bass and keys. He graduated from Berklee College of Music along with Ian and Dave. Mark, what's your earliest memory of me asking you to write music in XJ?
For, I think, longer than we've had notes, we didn't have notes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The XJ stream was drums only for years. You were just taking my word for it that I was writing lots of different chord progressions. You had no proof of this for like 2 years, I think. And I was like, trust me, bro, it's real music I'm doing. So I would just kind of write them in a notebook at first. And then there became like a filing system. And I would like come up with goofy names for stuff without this music actually being fabricated in a way that was like proven to a listener. So I've written, I guess, what you'd call songs or main programs.
In XJ Music, a program is a collection of musical instructions, like a piece of sheet music printed on paper. You can't hear a program by itself, just like you can't hear sheet music on paper. An instrument is a collection of audio recordings. XJ is like a performer using the instruments to play the programs.
We were hewing to this earth, wind, fire, water scheme for cool air. And we would all just sort of intuitively assign to those elements whatever musical properties we felt like. And that applies to me, the program writer, and to others as like the instrument uploaders.
And when it came to instruments and audio, I brought on board our friend Ian Hersey. He's a phenomenal guitar player, but I've also seen him shred on a Game Boy doing chip tunes. He's gotten into a lot of the demo scene style tracking I grew up on, and he's mixed or produced almost 100 records. He's been a crucial partner in completing XJ's sampler, mixer, and other aspects of the software.
I mean, for me, it was trial and error too. Like, it came in and it wasn't yet making tonal sounds. It was just drums. Mm. And so I made a bunch of drum instruments at first because that seemed to make sense. And then Mark and I got together and made a whole bevy of tonal instruments.
Yeah, we had a fun day with like a template beat.
Nice.
Yeah, just applying new instruments to this template beat to see if they work together.
Nice.
And we, you know, thought we had done some great stuff. And then once we threw them in, like half of them were just the cheesiest or just most inappropriate shit. You know, there was a saxophone instrument that like haunted XJ for months.
Yeah, that's the problem with fun.
Yeah, exactly.
My best friend from NYU Film told me for years that I should meet his brother because we seem to have so much in common, and it's true. Jamal Whitaker joined XJ Music for an internship to finish his degree in sociology. Over the last 4 years, he's become my main collaborator designing XJ's product and optics. Now he's our content and communications manager. Oh, and he is a formidable electronic music producer.
I started making beats mostly focused in hip hop at 14. And even before that, like, I had a very extensive background and, you know, from the age of like 3 of just participating in drum circles. We had djembes in the house. We had congas in the house. We had bongos in the house. We had birimbaos and kashishis.
That's awesome.
For the one guy who's listening and is like, oh yeah, kashishi, shake it, man. Yeah, you're my dude. Percussion was my deal. And in my experience as a producer and making beats, my style was heavily sample based. So my input as a musician is heavily percussion based because I'm not playing the violin that you hear, you know, laid in the background of track 3 on whatever, my first album or whatever. It's me just having the ear and saying, I want that to be on these drums that I'm playing or that I'm, you know, chopping and, you know, putting down. And it has been interesting and fun to do that to the extreme, making beats for XJ. And in the beginning, like, be completely removed from any type of other aspects of the music. It was like, just do what you do, but like really, really.
Yeah, I've been trying to learn what's important to musicians, like running around trying to catch all the pearls of wisdom you're dropping. And now when you listen to XJ, every time you hear a kick and a snare paired together, you know that an artist made that match. It's interesting to me that this activity is so ubiquitous. Anybody who makes beats would understand it takes a lot of time spent digging in the crates.
Definitely.
So I focused on that question. How can we capture this human activity of matching kicks and snares, hi-hats, and all the other samples so that there's aleatory potential from curated inputs of taste and culture?
Yeah, definitely. That is the bulk of my time in doing the arrangement of drums in my own production is like, this kick just does not fit this snare. They don't work. I don't know what it is. I can't name the science. It just is what it is. I just know they don't jive, and I know it's got to change.
We never taught XJ a single thing about how to pair kicks and snares. Not a single thing. We only taught XJ how to follow instructions. This instrument is essentially a sampler sequencer. When artists upload recorded audio, it's got the performance baked in, the rhythm and effects. So it's human in, human out. The uniqueness of XJ's sound comes from the fact that this is all handcrafted. And one of the first things that Jamal and I worked on was the user experience, research, and interface design for the XJ Lab where we compose music.
UX stands for user experience, the research and thought about how musicians and audiences perceive XJ and what they expect from it. UI stands for user interface, meaning the design of surfaces for human-machine interaction.
And I even remember telling the class what I was doing at this internship while everybody else was like, I'm shuffling papers over at this social work nonprofit over here. I'm doing this and that. I said, man, I'm like cloning various aspects of digital audio workstations I've worked with in the past, mostly trying to justify why somebody who was a sociology major was deep into this world of technology and music. These other kids were like, hey, what do you mean?
Maybe I'm just a huge nerd. It seemed like a natural leap from sociology to human-machine interaction.
There it is. I got my credits. I remember the first couple of weeks that I was the XJ intern, it was a lot of everything. Sitting down with Charney being like, can you copyright? Okay, yeah, here, I can write stuff. Yeah, sure. Let's work on this. Let's come up with marketing phrases, taglines. Let's try this. Read these research papers that I've compiled in my years of developing XJ. It was just a big download. The very first day, I remember it was Charney just pushing over like a notepad and pencils. The basics, out of your imagination. How can you make this thing work? And, you know, one of these Google Drives, there are code names of like, I don't know, the slap dropper or whatever, you know, whatever I thought would be a fun name for a little like DAW clone.
DAW, D-A-W, stands for Digital Audio Workstation. An electronic device or computer software used to alter and mix multiple recordings and tracks into a final output.
A lot of what I was relying on is, let's see, at that time, 2019, 10 or so years of being experienced in using Pro Tools in my own production and kind of knowing exactly what I liked about that interface, what I didn't like about that interface. What I had seen in my experiences with other interfaces, you know, different DAWs, Ableton, Reason, all the way back to Fruity Loops before it was FL Studio.
Hell yeah.
Fruity Loops.
I remember the old Fruity Loops. That was, I think, the first thing that I used.
Yeah, yeah. Fruity Loops used to be the shit that like broke dudes used to get because like it was the least costly option. And now it's just like, you know, it's got its suit and tie on FL Studio, you know.
Yeah.
People like really use it now too. It's crazy.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm like, I remember when that was fucking Fruity Loops, man. And every terrible producer, not to say anything about you or me or anybody else, but.
Oh no, I was terrible. Totally.
With the design for Stepmatic, it was like incorporating experiences with different DAWs and kind of like refining that in this exercise in UX design, UI design. And it was the first time I'd ever really done anything like that. If you hand me a pencil and paper and say, you know, draw something, okay, well, I can draw something. And then, you know, that eventually morphed on into placing rectangles, placing rectangles here, placing them there, making a grid, trying to map out what an event in a field grid would look like. Wow. You know, lots of like weird lime green shades and studying of all these dolls, like I was saying, and aping various aspects of them. In the months following that, it was like, get acquainted with house music. Let's see if you can musically integrate yourself into what we're doing right now. And what was at the time Cool Air and is now Chill House. It was like, okay, you're going to use, you know, your experience in production, mostly hip hop, to like study house music, the reference playlists, and just kind of like get yourself in the vibe of what is house and what isn't house to drop beats into XJ.
Mark's writing main programs. Jamal's writing beat programs. Ian's uploading instrument audio. What we're dealing with here is an algorithmic medium for collaborative recorded music.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How would you like succinctly describe an algorithmic medium?
A medium is any means of recording and transmitting information, and music is information. What makes it an algorithmic medium is that instead of directly writing on the medium verbatim, you are providing instructions, and the medium, instead of just being static, is alive in some way.
The living aspect of the medium is not consciousness. I mean, just to be clear, like it's just not, it's not an AI. It's not a conscious entity. It's more like the individual cells of your body following the instructions in your DNA. XJ is a unique sort of instrument and recording medium. You can't really hear your final product until it's live. To understand what a record is in the world of XJ, you need to think differently. Think in terms of creating a musical framework, then record a ton of audio performing variations of instruments within your framework. Then hand over your material to a machine performer. We don't publish albums or songs. We only broadcast channels running live nonstop 24/7.
We're all just using XJ, and the routes that bump and slaps and space follow are like totally different.
It couldn't have happened until we had preview templates.
And each channel is based on something we call a template.
An XJ template is the model from which we stamp out the product. We have the production templates that everyone is listening to in the app, and then we have preview templates that artists use to compose music and collaborate in real time. Since the XJ product is a 24/7 live stream, we need a template from which XJ continuously fabricates the music we hear.
Artists work on templates and then we play a template live 24/7 like a record into a player, except XJ iterates through every possible permutation of the content you gave. This is a paradigm shift regarding the artist's and audience's relationship with time.
Prior to that, we were all just working in, at the time, Cool Air. And I think the only thing available was the mainstream that was being published at all times. So if you put something in that's fucked up, then it's going to get published to the stream that everybody else listens to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like the Plent glitch. Building a digital audio workstation from scratch and building an internet broadcasting platform were pilgrimages for me as a computer programmer and a digital media maker. I've been learning a ton about music from my team, and I share the tech with them. I push everyone on the music team to their technical limit. They participate in software planning, writing features and bugs, and doing QA. I try to find surfaces for collaboration where I can meet musicians on their own terms. So, for example, Mark has been writing musical tests you might administer when teaching a piano student. Still, he writes the test in a standardized template we've developed so I can easily port it into a software unit test built directly into XJ's code. Musicians who work on XJ projects run XJ on virtual machines in the cloud. They have to do this kind of process, which is the behavior of a software developer. So I call everybody music developers, a combination of making music in XJ and helping me build XJ. Like, we avoid saying AI because XJ is not AI. XJ is a live show, running on cloud computers, but anyone on Earth listening exclusively in our app is tuned into the same broadcast. If you picked up any instrument and just played it live on the radio 24/7, that would be closer to XJ than some AI thing.
Who the fuck knows why? That just sounds like any random ambient library music. It sounds like a million things. What makes something good or bad in somebody's eyes? I have no idea. Music is less about its quality and more about the timing in which it finds somebody, you know? It's a lot simpler to make a convincing ambient track than it is to make some fully produced hip hop thing or house thing, electronic thing with like a groove and phrases or chord progressions that make sense, and then have that all like hit in the right way and have the mix sound real and past a demo stage. That's really, really hard.
In the future, the law will protect musicians from this so-called AI, because it shouldn't be any more ethical or legal to plagiarize artists' work using a neural network than a tape recorder. What we're trying to do is cultivate artists working in algorithmic media and try to find this future in a way that is compelling for artists and audiences, focusing on making sure that the human aspect of this is not lost all the way through to you sitting there having this experience. You know, you still know that this is music made by people, and you know who made it, and you know what their intention was when they made it.
I think that that's huge. That's a giant point of distinction, because Endel and Mubert are putting off like the polar opposite of that vibe. I don't think that makes it appealing to any listener either. I think people want to see some sort of humanity and vibrancy in the music, even if it's just background shit. Like, they still want there to be some notion that like, oh, somebody made this, or somebody with fucking blood running through their veins is responsible for what I'm listening to. And I think that that creates an incentive for artists to work within it. And I also think that that makes it exciting for listeners as well. Look at this brand new thing that like this artist I love and this artist I love is working within. You know, they're doing this whole other thing. It's not just an album that's on Spotify. It's not just the static recorded piece. It's an ever-changing, evolving thing.
The whole process surrounding this podcast and where we want to be going in the next coming months is like reaching out to artists and recruiting people to work within XJ. I was sitting there thinking, why not just do that? I've got like 6 albums that are like halfway done, just beat tapes sitting there. So might as well just start parsing those out and dropping those sound palettes into XJ and be the first outside, quote unquote, artist to be a part of XJ.
Nice. Yeah, I think that that's an amazing idea.
It's going to be interesting, but I'm like so excited to hear what XJ does.
Nice. That's an awesome thing to do as like an invitation for other artists to work within the medium.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
As a person who's been kind of away from the process this whole time and sort of checking in and watching the 30-second clips on YouTube and stuff, as an outsider, I'm not totally understanding like what makes XJ unique just yet. And I think that having these windows into the process could be entertaining in and of itself, but also be illuminating as to like what XJ actually is in the first place, right?
Right. How do we encourage somebody like Drake, for instance, to be a part of XJ? Take Thank Me Later from Drake, drop that in XJ and have it just constantly mashing up, and just be able to show Drake, hey, we've got this work of art that is just now ad infinitum.
That is really compelling, because you need that bridge to the medium.
Right, exactly.
It's so novel that being transparent and being open about it and being exciting is what's going to draw people to it. If it's novel, but it's like opaque, people are in the dark, they're not going to be drawn to it.
Mm.
There's not as much trust there.
If you're just walking past a window that you can't see through, you're not going to look inside.
Yeah, totally.
That makes sense.
Artists feel vulnerable and they want to know like what they're getting into, you know?
True, true.
If you can demonstrate something that makes them excited, be like, oh shit, I could work on something and it can yield this much material and all of these different iterations.
If you were an artist who's excited about this concept of being able to collaborate and develop a project into something that is just infinite, you could take it on tour, you know, and you could be in a different city every night, but with a different set every night, because your album is just changing. It's never repeating, you know, so you're going to have people that are going to follow you across the country, across the world, you know.
That's a really interesting idea. You have the structure of the song to fall back on and the key.
Mm-hmm.
An artist could be performing the song live and the artist does not even know like the context in which the melody that they sing is going to be surrounded in, because it's just like completely just getting generated on the spot that they don't even know what's coming.
Yeah. To be an artist that can take that and adapt to that and like be
good at that, where nobody else can do that, like, that would be pretty insane.
The algorithm is hard-coded. It's a machine that we call XJ Music. What you do with it is as open-ended as what you do with magnetic tape. We'll open this conversation now that XJ is up and running. Next episode, I'll invite more voices to join the core team and create XJ Music.